Okay. Somebody has asked about the D&O market. Let me finish this slide and I will take just a moment and we'll talk a little bit about the D&O market. And it is relevant to some degree in the context of these interesting coverages that are there. The last one we're going to talk about on this slide is costs associated with responding to personal asset freezes. So that's still, let's stay on the previous slide for just a little bit longer. That last one, asset protection. So that's a situation of there is something bigger going on that may involve an executive's trading in some way. And so as a result, you will see executives who may have been accused of some sort of fraud, some sort of self-dealing, what have you, their assets will be frozen. So they may not have access to their bank accounts, their credit cards, anything like that. Even the rich people, even the executives still need to buy milk for their kids. So this is something that gives you a little bit of coverage to deal with that, to try to get some of those assets unfrozen so they can go about their life or they can continue to do whatever they need to do in relation to the company while that underlying issue is being addressed. So before we go to the next slide, let's go ahead and read this question and actually answer it. So the question that has come from the audience is, can you address the current market for D&O insurance and why it is so expensive and are nearly impossible for smaller publicly traded companies? So I'll try to spend just 2 or 3 minutes on that. We could do an entire day on what's happening, but a lot of it has to do with there's sort of a perfect storm that has occurred out there in the D&O marketplace. So for many years, in my opinion, we had frankly too much capacity in the market. And as a result, we had a lot of carriers chasing premium or chasing clients downward. So the premiums were going down and down and down for a decade or more, to a point that they got too low in relation to the risks they were covering. So that was happening simultaneously with the fact that if you look at the securities litigation statistics that come out every year, one of the best places to find those, there's a report that comes out from Stanford every year. It's called the Stanford Clearinghouse Report. Take a look at that. And you will see that every year we tend to be litigation numbers are going up in terms of the cases filed are increasing. The median cost of settlement is also increasing. I think just 2 or 3 years ago, the median cost of settlement hit something like 12 or 13 million. So eating through the first layer of everything, particularly for small companies, as you talked about. We had that happening. We had situations in which cases weren't getting dismissed quite as fast. So again, it's lingering longer. But the real straw that broke the camel's back was the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in the Cyan case. I believe that was in March of 2018, in which they basically affirmed the fact that what was happening in some jurisdictions already or in some circuits already, that offering cases, IPO cases or secondary offering cases, but primarily IPO cases, could be brought in any jurisdiction or any court. So both at the state court level and the federal level. So now suddenly you have securities cases that are happening in state courts where there is no discovery stay, as well as before judges who are not used to handling them. I mean, theoretically in my home county in East Texas, the judge who decides your divorce could also decide your securities case if you brought it there. So as a result, the cost of securities cases just skyrocketed. So there's a whole lot of factors, and we could keep talking about them, but mostly the market was underpriced for a long time. The litigation was going up. So all of those factors together, and we had concentration among too few carriers at the primary level. So as a result, we had the carriers who kind of led the market, like AIG is an example, that just got, they became unprofitable. They turned the rudder on their giant, cruise liner ship. And when sort of the market leader turns the rudder, the entire market follows. So that's kind of the long answer. From whoever asked that question, my contact will be at the end. I'm happy to have a more detailed discussion. But let's go ahead and get back to these slides. And let's go ahead to the next slide. Okay, let's talk about just a few more D&O coverages you may not have thought of. One of them is electronic discovery consultation. So typically, one of the endorsements you'll see in a lot of policies these days is a little pool of money for hiring an electronic discovery consultant. There's two ways that this can be used. One is they'll offer some training or e-discovery readiness so that you kind of have a plan in place for how to store your documents, how to respond to a document request. The other thing that this pot of money can be used for is when the litigation is filed, you hire that consultant to develop a plan for production of those documents so that you can kind of contain the process and have a measured and appropriate process. As we all know, the cost of e-discovery is one of the things that's really skyrocketed litigation costs these days or in the last several years. So that's what that consultant fee is for. Use it, take advantage of it. It'll help save you money in the long run. It's typically going to be around $25,000 or so that's sitting there in your policy for you to use. The next is class certification event study. It is what it sounds like. So the premise is you can hire a consultant to help you stop certification of a class. Primarily, this is going to be something in the context of securities litigation. This is a coverage that ultimately does eat away at your overall limits. It does erode your limits, but they're trying to encourage you to go ahead and hire that consultant. Typically, there's no deductible associated with this because they want everything to be mitigated up front. But the whole idea behind all of these various coverages that we're talking about is that if you kind of try to take care of some problems before everything hits the fan and it gets worse, then the overall cost of everything is going to be cheaper. So the carriers, they put all these things in these policies to encourage you to use them and to, again, mitigate the overall matter. It's just, it's kind of like putting one of those blue tarps on your roof after a hail storm. It means there's less damage inside the house. It's the same idea. It's sort of putting that blue tarp on the beginning of a situation.